Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, our mission is to dig into some really fascinating foundational source material. It's a video transcript, and it's all about teaching the full English alphabet, phonics, and object recognition to young learners. And just to be clear for you, our listener, we're not here to, you know, learn our ABCs again. We're here to become experts on the way it's taught.
That's right. We're looking for the strategy behind it all. The source material is full of these magic acorns and fun activities. But hidden inside is a really solid curriculum for a six-year-old. Our goal is to pull out those core teaching techniques, the things that make the learning stick.
It's amazing how it cloaks these complex educational ideas in really simple, playful actions. It's much more about active discovery than just memorizing. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the very first letters and how they establish, of all things, a sense of scale.
Right, so if you look at that first group of letters, A through H, the strategy becomes pretty clear pretty fast. They start with the basics, you know, A for apple, that sound.
Sure, very classic.
And B for bus, buh. They even add the little vroom vroom and beep beep sounds.
Fun, but then it changes.
It does. After C for car, they pivot hard into comparing physical size. This is where it gets interesting.
This is the big animal section, right? D for dinosaur, E for elephant, and H for hippo.
Exactly. And this isn't just a lift, it's a lesson in comparison. First, the dinosaur, they say some were the biggest animals ever.
Okay, establishing a baseline.
Then E for elephant is the biggest land animal, a specific distinction.
Right.
And right after that, H for hippo is the second biggest land animal.
So in three letters, they've built a mental model of relative size. That's what you'd call cognitive scaffolding, isn't it?
That's exactly it. They're embedding science concepts right alongside the phonics.
And they're also embedding movement. E for elephant is about stomping around. That's a big, heavy action.
And then you get F for frog, F, and G for grasshopper, G.
And what do they both do? They hop.
Yes. The repetition of that one action hopping links two different sounds in the child's mind through a physical memory.
So it's not just an abstract sound. The body remembers it.
It's a classic multisensory technique. It anchors the sound in an experience.
Hmm.
And you can see how that would be so much more effective for a six-year-old.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We're moving into the middle of the alphabet where we find houses made of snow and more jumping.
The middle section is all about building out the context of the world. They do this brilliant thing with contrast. For I, you get igloo. The sound is I.
A house made of snow.
Right. And then much later, you get M for mitten, which keeps your hands warm when it's cold.
So they're teaching opposites, hot and cold, inside and outside. It's environmental context.
And they sneak in numeracy, too.
Oh, with the nest.
Exactly. N for nest, N-N. And the source specifically points out that the nest has three eggs. It even counts them. One, two, three.
It's so subtle, you could almost miss it. Just weaving in a little math lesson.
That's the scaffolding. They also tackle some pretty complex linguistic ideas. Take W for water. The sound is WW.
Right, and they say it's good to drink lots of water.
But then, they demonstrate the sign for water. The three fingers swiping across the chin.
Wow, so they're introducing the idea of nonverbal communication systems.
Without making a big deal out of it. It just broadens the child's understanding of what language can be.
Okay, but I have to ask about the hardest letter, X. How on earth do they handle X? The cake sound is a nightmare.
They did something, well, it was a perfect pedagogical move. Instead of trying to find a common word that starts with X, they just admitted it was different.
They did.
Yep. They said the sound X is heard at the end of the word box.
That's brilliant. So they taught the concept of a sound not always being at the beginning of a word.
And then, to give the visual, inside the box was a xylophone. So you still get the letter X visually, but the phonetic lesson is much more accurate.
That is just really, really smart design.
It's about being honest with the exceptions in the language.
We've zoomed through most of the letters. Now for the home stretch and some very creative objects.
Yeah, the last third of the alphabet is where a lot of the dramatic play comes in.
Like Q for queen, the sound is quo, and they suggest an activity.
Making a crown out of paper. It's about embodying the word.
An R for robot, air.
Another physical one, walk around the house like a robot. It's a very specific kind of jerky movement, totally different from hopping or stomping.
And they keep going with these activities. T for teapot has the whole I'm a little teapot song.
And U for umbrella becomes a little story.
Right. The little umbrella is too small for the grown-up, but it's perfect for the queen figure. More of that size comparison we saw earlier.
Every single letter has a purpose beyond just the sound. V for vine, VV, teaches you that grapes grow on vines. O for octopus, teaches you they have 8 legs.
And Z for zebra wraps it all up perfectly.
It does. They point out it's the last letter, that zebras have black and white stripes.
And that you see them at the zoo.
Highlighting that both words start with Z. It reinforces the lesson one last time.
This raises an important question. After going through all 26 letters with all these activities, how does the source make sure the whole sequence is retained?
Well, they end with the classic. The final piece of the puzzle is singing the full ABC song.
Of course. It locks the whole sequence into a familiar melody.
Exactly. It provides that final auditory structure to hold everything they've just learned.
So what does this all mean? I mean, it's clear the source material is incredibly effective.
It is. It uses this multi-sensory approach play, movement, scale, contrast to teach those 26 foundational pieces of knowledge.
But there was one more thing they introduced, a concept that was almost hidden in plain sight.
You're talking about the tempo.
Yes. The musical theory. They didn't have to include that.
No. But it ties everything together.
Mm-hmm.
They explicitly introduce tempo, how fast or slow music is, using the dinosaurs as an example.
A T-Rex would make you run away with a fast tempo.
But a dinosaur going to sleep would be a slow tempo.
And once you see that, you realize it's been there all along. The slow, heavy tempo of the elephant stomp, the quicker tempo of the frog hop.
It's teaching rhythm and coordination under the guise of an alphabet lesson. It is exceptionally efficient. Every single example delivers the maximum amount of contextual knowledge.
We've seen how this source material uses tempo to anchor knowledge. We hope you, the learner, can use this deep dive to maybe analyze your own learning structures.
This raises an important question. Given that the source material used this idea of fast and slow tempo to structure its activities, just think about how you could apply that to your own learning. How could incorporating different tempos of study, sometimes really fast, energetic research, and other times slow, deep, thoughtful review, help you master any new piece of knowledge far beyond just the ABCs?